Good afternoon, everyone. Evening. Welcome back. Let's all stand. We're going to sing an old hymn called I Must Tell Jesus.
Filled our hearts with wonder. Thank you for being here. Had my mind somewhere else, didn't I? Okay. If I can find my notes. One said to the preacher, "Why do you use notes? That's just a crutch." He said, "A crippled man needs a crutch." Take your Bibles and turn to John the 6th chapter. John the 6th chapter. Very familiar story to you and to me. Let's stand together as we give reverence to the reading of God's precious and holy word. It's not been too long ago we talked about the Sea of Galilee, but here we are in the earlier stages of this time. After these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles, which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip. Now, we need to really, if we catch hold of what's going on here. Notice, now, how many is around him? 12. But he's talking especially to Philip here. And he says to Philip, "When shall we buy bread that these may eat?" This he said, look at it, this he said to prove him, to test him. He's taking the exam now. This is on the test. This he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 pennies worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. And one penny would represent one day's labor. So he says 200 days of work, 200 days of labor would not answer that question. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, there's a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many? And Jesus said, make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, in the number about 5,000. Wow. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes, as much as they would. And when they were filled, he said unto the disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. You may be seated. These events took place just after the death of John the Baptist. If you read through the Gospels, you know that that was early on in Jesus' ministry, because John had said, I'm going to decrease, you're going to increase. I don't know if he knew at that point how he was going to decrease and how Jesus was going to increase, but they killed John. So this is in the last year and a half of the Lord's ministry. So he has a plan for our life individually. I think he has a plan for the church corporately, but has a plan for each one of us individually. Now, this may seem hard for us to grasp, that how it is that he's dealing with millions of people all at the same time, and yet, because he's God, he's able to deal with us individually as one individual. In verse 6, for he himself knew what he would do. Now, he knows now what he will do in our circumstances, in your circumstances and in mine. In the 42nd chapter of Genesis, there was a famine in the land, and Jacob sent his sons, you know the story, into Egypt for food. When they came back without Simeon, wanted to take Benjamin back with them, Jacob said, all this is against me. Have you been there? Have you felt? This is not working out. Look, this is all against me, he says. But all the time, God was planning this family reunion. Have you ever had anyone pull a surprise on you? That he was kind of fighting against something that was going on, and people were trying to give you a good surprise. They had something good for you. Just look at it. Jesus' plan for the multitude is completely different to that of many ministries today. A lot of folks, I hope we don't, but when looking at lots of people, most folks see dollar signs. But when Jesus looked at the multitude, he said, what What can I do for them? Now think about some of these meetings that Jesus had with his disciples. Send them away. We're tired. We don't need to fool with them anymore. Let's send them away. Let them take care of themselves. But now Jesus' plan, an objective for this crowd was totally, totally different than what most of us would have for a crowd, what our plan would be. As we look to see where Jesus is working and as we join him in that work, it will always have to do with building the kingdom. It will always have to do with winning the lost. It never ends with just feeding the multitude. It never ends there. It always has to do with winning the lost, with taking more folks to heaven. So I will ask you, as I ask myself this question, why am I following Jesus? Verse 2 says, a large crowd followed him because they saw his miracle which he did on them that were diseased. So some follow because they're fascinated with the spectacular of miracles. And some folks get so wrapped up in that kind of fellowship that they try to create that over and over and over again. And if it's not there, they make it up to be there. This is what happened. Well, I won't go there. Some follow for what is in it for me. Why am I following Jesus? What is in it for me? I'll follow as long as I'm receiving. I'm on the receiving end. And it's not all about money. Some of it has to do with back scratching. Some of it has to do with strokes. I'll follow him as long as I can get my strokes in this place among these people. When I fail to get my strokes, then I'll find some other place where I can get some strokes, where I can be the center of what is going on. We've been around a lot of babies in the last several years, and we've tried to add up how many grandkids we had, and we can't even figure out. Well, Gwen's got it figured out, and it's how many, 24 or 25? I don't know. We've got 7 great grandchildren and 16 grandkids. So we've been around a lot of babies. And babies have a way to make it about them. Have you noticed that? Well, folks, if we have to have it about us, we need to grow some. If the situation has to be about us, we need to do some growth. That's what babies do, is make it about themselves. And then there's these that follow because they have committed their lives to the Lord Jesus and whatever is out there. Whatever comes our way. And I don't know that I always do that. That's where I want to be at. That's where I long to be, is to be a follower of his because of my love for him, not because I get some kind of stroke or because I get money or because of some other thing. In verse 66 of that sixth chapter, the Bible says, from that time many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. Strange verse? No, they just got at the right place at the right time, the right circumstance, and they didn't have the fellowship. And I think that what happens in many people's lives, the reason they go away, they just come to that place that the strokes are no more. They come to that place that some way it's not about them, it becomes about other people. And when that happens, they go away. They go away. It can be COVID. It can be football. It can be sports of all kinds. It can be family trouble. Church is things are different. A few years ago, a man and a woman started coming to church here, and we've had this happen more than once, but the woman's ex-husband was coming, and so he said, I can't come. And I've not been there. I don't know. I've not been there. But I was foolish enough to ask why. Well, I'd see them and it'd bother me and on and on. And I said, let me ask you something. I said, when you get to heaven, do you think there's going to be a space for those that have had some kind of friction in their lives or with their family, and that this part of the family or this section is going to be for them, and then there's going to be a place over here somewhere where you don't have to have any dealings with them? Well, no, he didn't suspect it'd be that way. I said, if these folks are genuinely saved and you're genuinely saved, I said, I see your point. It's not that I didn't see the point. But there's a way that we can fellowship even in difficult situations if we're true followers of Jesus. And I understand that could be very difficult. In verses 5 and verse 6, Jesus knows what he'll do. But how will you and I respond to the test that Jesus has for us or for you? Our response, our faithfulness is not to be in accordance to what other people do. Whatever is going on in other folks' lives, our faithfulness is not to be in accordance to what we see other people do, but what would Jesus have us to do in our situation? Look with me. You're in John. So go over to the 21st chapter. And look at verse 20. Then Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved following, which also leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? And Peter seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? And you know the story. Jesus said unto him, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? You follow me. Whatever other people do, you follow me. In 2 Kings, there's this test for Elijah, and he tells him, you just stay. Just stay where you're at. When you don't want to stay, you stay anyway. When the test is there. Philip failed. Many times we do. I have many times. Philip's response says, 8 months' labor would not feed this crowd. In Mark's gospel, they said, send them away. We've come here to rest. We are not responsible for this crowd of people. Let me ask you this, as I ask myself this. Is there anyone that I'm not responsible for as far as the kingdom is concerned? Do you have a group that you feel awkward in ministering to? The way they dress, the way they smell, their attitude. I could just go down, you can do it in your mind if you want to, just go down the list and start naming these folks that you would feel awkward in talking to about Jesus, and just go down the list. In some of our lives, our relatives should be those that is easiest for us to give a witness to, and sometimes they are the very hardest for us to witness to. So is there a group there somewhere that we have difficulty with? We're responsible for everyone. It's our responsibility to share the gospel with those folks that Jesus has put in our path, whoever they are, and whether we like them or dislike them. If we hate their attitude and their actions and what they do, we are still responsible for them. If I had an opportunity to live my life over, I would do things different. And I think that one of the things that I would do different is that I would invest more in my own family. Not so much in my girls. I think we invested in them and their spiritual growth. But in this outer circle of my family, nieces and nephews, and I have a bunch of them, and great nephews and great nieces now that just sprint, hundreds of them probably, I would invest greater in them. I remember having a conversation with one of my nieces in a hospital. We was there to visit her dad, but she was there. And she began to question me about a relationship with the Lord. And where would she start? She'd made a profession of faith. She'd been baptized. She'd been out of church for years and years and years. So where do I start if I want to come back, how do I start? And it just so happened that at that time, I was in the middle of experiencing God with Henry Blackaby. And I began to tell her about this little book that I was having a daily devotion in. Now, did God set that up? You know, normally I would not have been in that boat, but here was the situation, and God sets up the situation, and He sets you up, and He sets me up constantly to share. It's just like the woman at the well. He sets us up for the sharing situation in our lives. Mark's gospel tells us that He asked the disciples what bread was among the crowd. And then Andrew finds this boy with 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish. So, what is the principle? When you and I think of ministry and ministering to other people, I don't know about you, but one of the first things that comes into my mind is money. Can we afford to do this? What can we afford to do? What is available to us to be able to do this? And we set our limits on our own limits. We set our limits on what we have to do with. How much is in the budget? How much do we have to use for this? But the Lord gives us this what I want to call it, this economy to go by, that if we open our mouth wide, He will fill it. We expect small things, and so we get small things. We expect small ministries, and we get small ministries. When we anticipate not what we can do, but what can Jesus do in this situation. Now, I want to close with this little story. It's familiar to you. But in 1 Kings, the 17th chapter, there's a story about Elijah. And, there's this famine going on, and he's instructed to go to this place and wait on the Lord. And the Lord has instructed someone to take care of him there. And so when he gets there, this lady's gathering up sticks to build a fire with. What are you going to do? We got enough meal and we got enough oil. It's me and my son. We got enough to make these 2 cakes, bread. We're going to eat that and die. Now, you can go back and read the story. I'm just going to tell you. Now, he has the audacity to say to her, make me one first. And you know what? When God, normally she would have said, why, you nut? I'm not going to do that. But when God moves, he prepares people. He prepares their heart. And so she does what he has instructed. Made the prophet one, made her and her son one. They ate. They survived. She goes back the next day. And I get this picture. She's scraping the bottom of the barrel every time. But every time, she gets enough to do what is needed. All through the famine, there's enough to supply Elijah and her son. And the oil is replenished. Now, did God fill the barrel to the top? No, he didn't. They just keep scratching the bottom of the barrel. And it just keeps being enough for them to do what God has instructed to be done. in your life and in mine. We don't have to have the resources at our hand to be able to do what God has called us to do. What He has called us to do is to be faithful with what we have. To be faithful with that. I think I've told this before, but I feel like maybe I need, for somebody's need here tonight, I need to tell this again. But I've told so many things. Most of you know a lot about my life. I worked at a service station for Gwen's dad. Through high school, after I turned 16, from the time I turned 16 until I graduated, I worked for him at a service station near the school there. Matter of fact, the school gave me permission to get out the last period and go to work. And so I did that for however long that was, 3 years. And he had this daughter that I thought was the prettiest thing I had ever seen in my life. And I guess he'd been watching my eyes. But he left a little booklet on the desk for me to find. He didn't say, "I'm leaving this for you." He just left a little booklet on the table for me to find. And I can't remember the title exactly, but it was, "Why Am I a Tither?" It was about tithing. A boy that's never been in church never heard about tithing before. And I'd never heard that term. I didn't know a thing about it. But I read this little short booklet about tithing. And I was convinced, hey, this is what I need to do. I wasn't making a dollar and a quarter of an hour. There's, what is that? 12 and a half cents. I didn't have much money, but I was convinced that's what God wanted me to do. And I adopted that little principle in my life of tithing, of giving 10% of what I had back to the Lord. And I think Lyle did that on purpose because he was pretty sure I was going to marry his daughter, and he wanted us to be able to make it. And we couldn't make it without giving. And so as time passed on, things were pretty tough when we were in college. But God had led us to tithe. And we came up with this, and I don't know where, but we decided, now, unless God leads you to do this, do not do it. But the Lord had spoke to both of us in a way that instead of tithing on what we was making, which was work-study salary, and the church was really taking good care of us. They was paying us $25 a week, and it took about that much for gas. But anyway, we decided that we would give in accordance to what we needed, not in accordance to what we had coming in. We knew about how much it was going to take to survive. And so we gave in accordance to that. I'm not suggesting that you do that, and I wouldn't suggest it to anybody else. I'm just saying that this is how the Lord had directed us. And both of us were full-time students, and we had lots of car trouble. There was lots of expenses that come up that we didn't know how in the world we was going to make it, but we just made it. It just always came in. And it didn't come in great big sums or anything like that. I had gone to the post office one morning and got the mail, and in the mail there was an electric bill, and I don't know the exact amount. I think it was $75. It was right in there, and I don't know why in the world it was so much, but back then it was. And I just broke down. I just said, Lord, there is not a way in the world we can pay this. We didn't have $75. We didn't have $25. I thought, there is no way. I went through the mail, and here was a little stamped envelope with handwritten on it and a return address, and the name on the return address is, the guy's name was Jerry Wiles, and I hadn't seen him in years. When I was in school at Williams, I had Southern at that time. He was on staff there. And I'd got to know him a little bit during that time. Really a fantastic Christian. But I knew the name immediately when I read it. And I opened it up and had a little note in it and said, Lenny, we've kind of lost track of you. Didn't know for sure where you were, and I'm hoping you'll get this. But he said, I think his wife's name was Lisa, but I'm not positive about that. But he said, my wife and I were praying, and you came to our mind. And we just got this impression that we were supposed to send this to you. I hope you can use it. And I unfolded it, and it was $75. Folks, little is much when God is in it. God may not lead you to do that at all. There is this principle to give, and it shall be given unto you, pressed down, shaken together, and running over shall men give unto your bosom. But it's not only just your financial needs that God will meet, But it's this other need. It's this other space in your life that He will meet your needs, whatever those are. When you make this commitment to follow Him, that say, well, I don't know. Yeah. He will take care of you. If you make a commitment to do what He has called you to do, you may scratch the bottom of the barrel, but it's going to be there. You'll be able to scratch up enough to make a pound of cornbread to be able to feed your family. It will just be there. And He has done that in our life over and over and over again. The first little church we pastored, the treasurer was totally oblivious to our needs. Things would be really close sometimes. We would really be depending on that little $25 check for that following week to get groceries or some gas or whatever it was. And he'd forget to pay us. And I was so prideful, I would not ask for it. And so we'd go without it. And without fail, someone would put some money in
in my pocket. Enough to meet our needs as they came. We ate a lot of green beans, and we had homemade French fries and light bread with butter on it several times for supper. But God met our needs, and if I had the ability to take a young family under my arm, the first thing that I would want to teach them is to tithe. Give back to the Lord. Let's pray. Why don't we stand? Tim, won't you lead us in prayer?